away until 4 p.m.
590 The Fan, taking it to the streets in the STL.
Does just the thought of a new year motivate you to clear things out at your home? Well, it does the Appliance Discounter House.
We're marking prices way down just to get it out the door in order to make room for more great appliance deals.
These appliances need to go, all brands, including Samsung, Bosch, and GE.
Come by any of our beautiful showrooms and check out these clearance items priced so low that we're not even allowed to advertise.
The Appliance Discounter's deal so fine since 2009.
Hey, bro, I like that.
Looking to wet your whistle? Well, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill has you covered. Swing by one of Hotshot's 11 area locations and try the featured beer of the month. This month, enjoy a pint of Bud Light. It's available for only $3 at Hotshot's throughout February. There'll be a new featured beer each month in 2019, and you can get the straight skinny on all of them at HotShotsNet.com. Hotshot's, all the games, all the time, for over 25 years.
I lived local because I love St. Louis, just like Club Fitness.
They support me and my neighborhood.
Lifting local means lifting our community to healthier, happier lives.
Club Fitness knows this town because we're from this town. Locally and employee-owned in the Lou for over 35 years. And with 23 locations and over 700 weekly classes, there's something for everybody.
So lift local with us.
Lift local, St. Louis.
Lift local at Club Fitness, the right fit for everybody. Visit liftlocalstl.com.
Every great success story starts with one brave decision. And if you're one of the millions of Americans with college credit but no degree, one brave decision is all that stands between you and the future you want. At Maryville University, we know returning to college takes courage, but your decision isn't really about going back to school. It's about moving forward. And we'll be with you every step of the way. Let's be brave together. Learn more now at online.maryville.edu.
First, let's talk about the food before we let you know where you can feast on it. When was the last time you had giant Alaskan king crab legs? These babies are at least a pound each, and they're served sliced open, so all you do is dig out the meat and dip it in a seasoned hot clarified butter. That's how it's done at Surf and Sirloin, located in the southwest quadrant of Manchester and 270. Open for lunch Tuesday through Sunday and dinner 7 days a week and serving only USDA prime beef. Check out their menu online at surfandsirloin.com.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands.
Man, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I love their music. You know what I have on my iPod on my phone? Marrakesh Express. Anybody know that song? Dan probably knows that song.
Oh, yeah.
They used to play it. They'd have it run right into another song. I forgot the other song, but it was actually, I don't know, like two songs in one, and they never played just Marrakesh Express. I can't remember the other song. Real quickly, before I get some business out of the way, I cannot even believe, I just glance at my emails here. The emails I'm already getting about Terry Daly, and I just want to tell you, one of them, the guy reminded me of, and I've completely forgot about this. If you remember, I said he used to be this investigative reporter who was always just a little bit off on his story, Dick Daly, and this Joe in South City, he says, one of those reports, Dick Daly was down south. And it was after some civil unrest, and he said he was going to confront some white supremacists to tell them they should learn to get along with black people. And he said because he heard one guy say they were going to have a good old-fashioned southern lynching. And he was bragging about how they were celebrating, and they were putting out white tablecloths and mosquito torches and having like a celebration and a party. And the more he described it, I said, Dick, I think you might have misunderstood. This sounds like a luncheon, not a lynching. Like, you're down south and they're having a big luncheon, and he goes away from the phone and then comes back and says, I'll get back to you. He misheard the word luncheon and thought they're having a lynching down south. And that's one of dozens of these things that I wish I could remember. So, Joe, thank you for that a great memory. I'm glad you remember that because I didn't. Here's another email. A guy says, if you go on YouTube and Google Terry Daly, there are three segments of Friday songs that somebody posted. He said, my favorite is the one about the airport in Illinois. He has to be talking about...
Mid-America.
Yeah. He says the other is about a guy who has his brother growing inside of him. He says, I know they probably won't be played on the air, but you might enjoy them. Yeah, Mark, thank you. I will look those up. It's time to send everybody who is even thinking about buying a new car to Johnny Landolf Chevrolet. And when I say new car, I mean pre-owned. We include pre-owned because for a lot of people, that's their new car. I've bought plenty of both. I've bought plenty of pre-owned cars and more new cars than I should have bought. And I'm proud to say that five or six of those came from Johnny Landolf. Johnny Landolf is a Chevrolet name that has been in this town at the same location since 1960, up in North County, the Washington Elizabeth exit off Interstate 270. Johnny Landolf was John's dad's name, and that's why the name is on the sign, but obviously John Jr. has the same name, so they didn't have to change the sign. Here's another thing they didn't change. They didn't change the way that John Landolf Sr. taught his people to treat people. That stayed the same, just like the sign. And what made Sr. successful is what's making John Landolf Jr. successful. Anybody can have land, anybody can have cars, and a building, and a bunch of people working there. That describes every dealership. But they don't all know how to treat people. They don't all know how to treat people in a way that lets them know how much they appreciate they made the decision to buy their car there. Car meaning truck, SUV, car, whatever. We'll call them all cars. So much so that the experience is so great, they'll come back next time and buy their next vehicle there. See, most dealerships are short-sighted. They just want to make the sale, get it done, and they're done with you. They don't look at it that way. They think, what can we do to not only make this person happy, but have them come back next time they buy a car, have their spouses come back, have their kids come here, have their parents come here, and that's what happens. So, if you hate the experience of buying a car, I'm pretty sure you've never shopped at Johnny Landolf. Because if you have, you wouldn't be able to say that anymore. So our invitation is simple. Even when other dealers' business may be slow for them, I don't ever want that to be the case at Johnny Landolf because we got plenty of people who are aiming the PM, lots of people. It's a pretty significant audience. And if you're really aiming the PM and you'll just at least give them a chance, just go there and shop there. I'm not even telling you to buy anything there. Just include Johnny Landolf. I know what decision you'll make, and I think I know where your next car is going to come from. Again, the Washington Elizabeth exit off Interstate 270, 24/7 at Landolf.com.
Let's all go to the lobby. Yeah. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
He just walked in about 2 minutes ago. Dan Buffa is with us. Dan Buffa is brought to you by Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States for lots of good reasons. You don't get to be number one and number two, a distant number two, without doing a lot of things right, and they do. And number one on the list is a great value, a lot of window for the money, Window World. You can find out more at windowworldst.louis.com. So, Mr. Buffa, Dan, you were, I didn't get a chance to peek in or anything. You were in there a long, long time. You're in there 2.5 hours. What did you have done in there today? Can you share it with us?
Man, 2.5 hours really flew by. They're playing a movie in there today, so I was going to really relax.
No kidding.
Yeah,
oh, special for you, special treatment.
Yeah.
They play a movie while you're getting the spa treatment. Wow.
Well, that's... because they know I'm talking about movies on this show, so they kind of get me warmed up. I put one of my favorite movies on, so I was really in the zone before I came on.
Well, that would explain the 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
They have a new technique they use back there. It's called the craft.
Yeah.
The Craft?
Yeah. And a number of interpretations.
Robert Craft.
Yesterday we were discussing what to call the new gate of the New England Patriots, and you came up with Jobs Gate. And I had a list. You're the one that came up with it. What a shock. You think it's good.
That's how little memory that I have. I'm not kidding. I don't even remember that.
No memory served him well, Tim.
Tom Brady deflating the footballs was Deflategate. When they spied on the Rams at the Super Bowl, it was Spygate. So now we've got a new gate to name, and we were joking about it yesterday, and you suggested Jobsgate. And I had an emailer listener email me yesterday, and he said we should call it Mastergate.
That's good.
Not quite right though, because he wasn't doing that. He had a little help, so
no. Yes. But that's
well,
a good
no,
one.
No. Tim's got a point. Master, that's when you do it yourself.
Yeah, you got to stay by.
Is that the correct terminology? If somebody else does it, did they master you?
Well,
is that...
No. Well, no, they don't. Pleasuregate was something that came to mind. Well, elongate.
Hang on a second. Let me Google what it is.
Inflated aircraft.
Here's another one. You know, since Brady, when he had the balls reduced by air, called it Deflategate. I thought maybe we'd call it Inflategate.
Oh yeah.
There you go. Yeah. The Patriots just never escape that kind of stuff. They're never going to. Once one thing fizzles down, something else happens. It doesn't even matter.
And when you were in the green room, did you even look for cameras? Did you check?
No, I embrace the cameras. Film what you want. I mean, I'm just in there relaxing. I mean, I'm not going to hide from anything.
Wow, man.
Look at you.
Yeah, TMZ was in there taking pictures, man. They'll be up soon.
Well, I got news for you. TMZ doesn't even know who you are. I am. Nobody on this show. We're not quite
thankfully
important enough for TMZ. So what are we talking about today?
Well, of course, we're going to cover the Oscars. I think it was one of the better shows in the last decade as far as pace and as far as just not slowing down and some good surprise wins. I got a couple movies to talk about today. One kind of more of a mainstream, I wouldn't say family film, more of a true story about a wrestling family in the United Kingdom. And also I have an indie that came out in St. Louis on Friday that I had watched weeks ago in Los Angeles that thankfully got to St. Louis. So you want me to start with the Oscars or you want some reviews first? What are you feeling like today?
I'd start with the Oscars because the sooner you do it, the fresher it is. Let's go with your Oscar take.
Well, I mean, even in recent years, I watch because it's the Super Bowl of movies. I mean, it's when all the big awards are handed out. The Golden Globes are kind of a joke. The Oscars are the thing. But in recent years, the hosts just weren't that good. I don't need somebody to get on the stage for 15 minutes in the beginning to tell me about politics and about rants and monologues. This year there was no host. There was just presenters, and it improved the flow. Presenters had more time to have a couple jokes. The people accepting the awards had a little more time. I think the focus was put on the movies, and I think that's the best thing that came out of it. I don't think they're going to stick with it again for next year, but I hope they do, because this 3 hour and 20 minute show was a very, very fast Oscars. Usually it clocks in closer to 4.
I want to know why they can't do this, best of both worlds, because for everything the Oscars was or wasn't this past Sunday night, you'll never, ever beat an Academy Awards ceremony hosted by somebody like Billy Crystal.
I know
you say they don't need a host, but when you have a host like that, to me, that's the show. I mean, that made the show.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's just more in years. If you don't have one person you're thinking about, just go with go with presenters. Go with just kind of the flow. But yeah, I mean, if you get a guy like, I've always thought The Rock could just be a fun host because he's good at comedy. He's larger than life. And apparently, and this was inadvertently, I kind of asked, I tweeted out weeks ago that, hey, next year you should get The Rock. And The Rock responded to me on Twitter saying he was the first host this year, but he couldn't do it due to scheduling conflicts with his movie. So maybe he'll do it next year. But this year was great. It moved fast. I think the best part of the night was Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper performing The Shallow, because you had Bradley Cooper, who remarkably in like 2 weeks had gotten back his Jackson Maine look and had rehearsed enough to get on the stage, and he sounded incredible. The song was great. They won Best Song. Black Panther won three awards. So that was great. Green Book won Best Picture, and everybody's mad about it. I enjoyed the movie. It won Best Picture. I think people were wanting Roma to win. But for the most part, every Best Picture nominee won an award, which is nice. It tells you the versatility in film. But I think the highlight of the night, outside of the Cooper Gaga performance, was the teaser trailer for Martin Scorsese's new film, The Irishman. Comes out Christmas, and this is where Netflix really took center stage. It said at the end of the trailer, in theaters and on Netflix. When you wake up in a world where you can just get up on a Friday morning and watch a Martin Scorsese movie on Netflix. You don't have to leave the house. That's a big deal. It reunites Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel. It is about Frank Sheeran, the guy who had ties to Jimmy Hoffa and, of course, had ties possibly to his death. That is what The Irishman is about. That was kind of like the thing that I kept thinking about long after the Oscars were over.
Well, I'll tell you who's not too thrilled about either going to watch it on the comfort of your home or is the movie theater owners. I don't think about being able to watch it on Netflix and not go to the theater.
It's going to come out in theaters, but this is what... And look, you know, Alfonso Cuarón, the director of Roma, Netflix film, won Best Director. He won for cinematography. You have Netflix kind of scooping up more nominations and more wins, and directors like Steven Soderbergh, who just directed a film called High Flying Bird about an NBA lockout. He went to Netflix because of the freedom. Everybody, every filmmaker that says, that talks about their movie at Netflix says that they just give you freedom. They tell you, they give you the budget you want. They tell you to go shoot your movie and then come back and then we'll look at it. And then they pretty much put what you made on Netflix and it goes out everywhere.
Now, I didn't talk to you about this and I didn't plan on doing this, but you know I interviewed Marlon Brando the day before he died.
You did.
You knew that.
Well,
you
knew that, right? I know, yeah.
It's interesting. This is the kind of vision this guy had. He actually said in the interview he hoped he'd never see the day when a movie theater movie could be watched at the same time at home that would kill the movie industry. You want to hear a little of that?
Yeah, sure.
A little interview? All right, let me get it to the part. Hang on. Okay, here it is right here. Marlon Brando. I remember this. Yeah. I have trouble getting started there for a second. You'll hear me in the background questioning him, but you know he's actually on mic.
Mr. Brando, do you? I know that a lot of people said when VHS came out, it'd be the end of the. That's it. That's the end of TV and the movie business. But of course, the movie business is still thriving. Do you ever imagine a scenario that might kill the movie industry altogether?
Well, Frank, I tell you, excuse me, I'm afraid. We might see the day when, you know, somebody gets to make a choice. Do I go to the movie theater or do I watch the movie at home? The same movie. Playing in your home while it's at the excuse me. It would kill the movie industry. You know, when The Godfather came out, you could have had to go to the movie theater to see it. It had a good long run. And when the run was over, you know, yeah, then you could put on DVD or, you know, watch it on, you know, TV or whatever. But I think if we ever see the day when you got a choice to not go to the theater, it's going to be the death of the movie business. I'm afraid we might have to take a break. I'm not feeling very well. I don't feel very good.
That's pretty good.
See? He even addressed it.
He did. And the funny thing is, I was wondering how many sentences he can get out before anyone was coming. That's the whole idea. Poor guy couldn't keep it in.
You're laughing at his ill health.
I am, condition. Yeah. Well, he's gone now. He can't do anything about it.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I didn't like the Oscars. I thought they were boring. I'd rather see just a killer host, not Whoopi Goldberg, not Ellen DeGeneres, not who are the other duds that have hosted?
James Franco and Anne Hathaway did a co-hosting gig that was atrocious.
Horrible.
And
yeah,
Seth
horrible.
MacFarlane basically read off jokes the whole night. It was kind of boring.
Horrible. I'd rather see no host than see that. Give me the best ones. Billy Crystal.
Steve Martin was good. Martin almost got Russell Crowe to come out of the crowd and beat the crap out of him that night. He made a joke that just made Russell Crowe mad. I'm never going to forget that. He was genuine. I don't think that was written, and I think Crowe thought about going after him.
What was the joke?
He said something about his musician side job, or either joking with about his personal life, and I don't think Crowe really liked it, but it was hilarious because
I don't envision Russell Crowe as having much of a sense of humor.
Probably not. No.
I'll tell you what else did a good job. Sean Hayes hosted one year, and he's a song and dance guy. Yeah. And if I remember, he really impressed me.
Hugh Jackman did it 10 years ago, and he did it really well. He kind of danced around and did his thing. He's also kind of a Broadway guy.
Didn't
so that
Seth
was 10 years ago.
Do it once?
Yeah, he did it like in a couple years ago.
Nah, I disagree. Seth MacFarlane, I don't think it was a good job at all. I'll tell you this. I guarantee you that right now, they're already talking to whoever. They're not going to wait.
Sure.
They want to lock up whoever's going to be next year's host and go for the best of the best and get it done now. Do they get paid to host that show?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, they have to get paid some kind of flat fee because it really is a lot of prep. I mean, you have to go through the whole show with the producers. They have the whole thing planned out. That's the thing about the Oscars. Even if they take long sometimes, most of the groundwork, the blueprint for the show is pre-planned. So that is that's kind of a weeks and weeks. I mean, if they're in February, you're planning that thing in November and December. You're going through the motions. You're going through the scripts. And to me,
they should be paid a lot of money because it's no different than working on a movie.
Yeah,
it makes or breaks the show. And you're talking about a bunch of people who got all the money in the world. Come on, scrounge up $500,000 or whatever and pay the host.
Yeah, and really, one of the biggest takeaways was after, at 62 years old, Spike Lee finally won an Oscar for Black Klansman, which I thought was one of the better movies of the year. He won it for co-writing it, did not win for director. A guy that an illustrious career that has so many hits, he finally won his first Oscar.
Okay, but didn't he also throw a tantrum and walk out and turn his back on the stage when he didn't get another award?
No, he didn't. No, I think he expressed displeasure at losing the Green Book, but no, I think he was elated about winning that screenplay award.
Okay.
But Olivia Colman, who is the star of The Favorite, upset. This is the biggest upset of the night. Glenn Close was pretty much picked. I mean, there was a couple certainties. There was Gaga and Cooper winning for Best Song and Glenn Close winning for The Wife, but Olivia Colman, who had been
I never heard of.
I know. She's mostly a TV actress. She had been in 96 different projects before this, but this was her first big role. She just, when they announced her name, she just ups. I mean, I think Glenn Close was probably like getting ready to get out of her seat. So that was kind of the biggest surprise of the night. I wasn't crazy about The Favorite. I found it to be slow, not as funny. It was not. That was the only award it won all night, but it was a big surprise.
This is what makes you wonder, though, if maybe somebody doesn't have an axe to grind with Glenn Close.
Yeah, never know. Yeah.
She's not on the A-list, because to me, a lot of this is really political. You know, when a movie like The Artist gets Best Picture, by the way, a movie no one has ever watched a second time. Nobody rents it. Nobody downloads it. It's a horrible, horrible movie, a throwback to 1925.
I wouldn't say it's horrible. It's just not Best Picture.
It was not even good. Okay, so that's political. And when Glenn Close, and I saw the wife, it was fantastic. She was tremendous.
Yeah.
And when she loses to this chick, I think that somebody's trying to send a message. Hey, Glenn, don't get too cocky. We're not giving it to you. I don't think it's about viewers, moviegoers at all. I think it's political. A lot of it is.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I mean, Regina King won for If Beale Street Could Talk, that was a very much well-deserved. Mahershala
Ali.
Is it
Regina or Regina? I thought it was Regina.
It was Regina, I think. Regina King. I know there's a Regina Hall. She's more of a comedy actress.
Vagina.
No, Paul. Paul Harris. You know, that's the problem with Paul Harris.
No, that was Paul Harvey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was Harvey.
Go ahead, Dan.
Mahershala Ali, who is now 2 for 2 in Oscar wins. I mean, he's having a moment. True Detective wrapped up on the same night that he wins his second Oscar. I mean, there's pretty much no debate right now that he is one of the actors. I mean, if not at the top of the list, he's kind of like the new Denzel. He's blazing that kind of trail through Hollywood.
And his first name is Mahershala.
Mahershala Ali.
I had a chance to interview him just yesterday morning about his big. He was really excited, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Ali, can you share your thoughts with us?" Here's what he said.
I'm the greatest of all time. I'm one of the greatest movie stars ever lived. I remember when my cousin Muhammad Ali, he was the greatest. He's the great whoop Joe Frazee, whoop son to listen. Now I'm the greatest.
Mahershala Ali.
Seamless.
Wow.
Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
Did you watch the whole True Detective?
I did not. I'm a couple episodes behind.
I thought it was a spectacular series. I was spellbound by it, and I thought the ending was a huge fall off the cliff.
Yeah, I've heard that he was great, but the ending is kind of a disappointment.
It was so good. The build-up was so spectacular, and I just thought the ending couldn't have been any goofier.
Because I've watched
five of the eight. But hasn't that been the case with a couple of those True Detective things?
Well, the second season was just a disaster. The first season was, I mean, it led up to kind of a chase between Harrelson and McConaughey and the killer. But I think these things, man, maybe Tim, you can agree, they build up so much in the first 4 to 5 hours, and then it's like, man, unless you're just a genius of a writer, they're going to fall down the hill. But I do hear that Mahershala playing three different time periods was phenomenal.
He was terrific.
Gosh, the guy, I mean, he's probably going to win an Emmy.
He played the same actor, like, at 30, at 40, and at 70, and he was intertwining them, and at some points, he would, like, both of them were in the room talking to each other at the same time because he was losing his mind.
I think the older version was so great because, I mean, the way they aged him, with not a lot of makeup either, just a little gray hair and around the eyes, but this guy, he won the first Oscar for Moonlight, Barry Jenkins' first film. Now he
horrible
wins for...
Horrible movie.
I like
there's
it.
An,
you didn't like
there's
it?
An Academy Award-winning movie that absolutely stunk to me. Moonlight.
I liked it. You didn't like it?
No. No, can't you tell? No, I didn't like it.
Frank, did you not like it? Well, let's move to new movies this week. The Oscars were great, but let's get on to the new movies.
One last thing. You know what I'm tired of? I'm tired of all these shows, whether it's a True Detective thing or some Netflix. All of a sudden, it's like everybody has to do flashback scenes, present day, flashback, present day. I get sick of that. I don't like that. It's confusing to me, and I'm not smart enough to follow it. When did that all start?
You know
what I'm talking about? It's like a common thing now. Now I'm watching a scene from 1963. Well, the only way I might know it is the tinting of the picture changes a little, and I go, oh, okay, that's him as a young guy. I get confused by that.
I think if it's done well, it's fine. It just depends if it's written well, if it's acted well. I mean, if it's put together well. But people do go to that because it's easy to write. You can easily create drama by having different time periods. But, you know, I mean, when The True Detective, which is already hyped up because of that first season to be something special, I know it can build it up to something where it can fall off, like Tim said, off a cliff. But
another example of something that happened, it was a technique, and it started maybe not with The Office, but I first noticed it with The Office, was the handheld camera thing. The camera's always moving up and down.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And then now everybody does the hand. I hate that. Come on.
See,
is that supposed to make us feel like, ooh, this is actually happening and it's not actors or something?
And one of the better ways to go against that is what I think the John Wick movies do. They just kind of bring the camera out, so instead of having you be right up and next to the two guys fighting, they just show you they back up, because the director of those movies says, well, most fight scenes in movies are kind of crap because they're jump cutting and they're just really confusing. That's why he pulls it back and shows the whole fight taking place. So I'm kind of with you there. I wish they would just kind of pan back, put more dedication into each movement and scene instead of just trying to jumble the camera around. So I'm with
you
on that.
Did you watch any of that Western thing, The Legend of... I can't think of the name of it. It's a comedy, but it's weird. Oh, shoot. Are they mentioned
it on the
Oscars? Oh,
you're talking the one on Netflix?
Yes. What's the name of
it? Is it recent? Buster Scruggs?
Buster Scruggs.
It was nominated.
Did you watch it?
I'll tell you what. The Tim Blake Nelson, it's six different small stories stuffed into one movie. I think some of the stories worked, but not all of them did. So the overall
effect. The first two were great.
Yeah, Tim Blake Nelson, he's great.
It fell apart.
The last two were just boring to me. Liam Neeson one was kind of interesting, but the Tim Blake Nelson one where he has that duel outside in the street is just hilarious.
Yes.
And he's singing those songs, too. But that's the Coen.
It's so
man.
Campy and funny, and it's like a little bit of Blazing Saddles, a little bit.
It is.
What's it called? Lime Me, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
That's the one.
Six-part story. Folks, that's also
watch
nominated.
Watch the first two. The first one especially.
It's hilarious.
Really funny.
I think James Franco's in the second one. It was kind of all right. But the new movie, Fighting With My Family, which I had no idea. It's a true story of WWE star Paige, who came from Norwich, United Kingdom. She came from a rough and tumble British family, and she was kind of this, let's just call it black sheep, who was the least likely to get into the World Wrestling Federation, but she made it in, and this movie came from a documentary that Dwayne The Rock Johnson watched while he was filming Fast and the Furious. It's about, she comes from a family of wrestlers. Nick Frost is in it. Lena Headey from Game of Thrones. But this is a hilarious movie, and it's a true story. And I think that even if you're a wrestling fan or not, I think you can get a really good enjoyment out of this. Because, again, I had no idea about this woman. I didn't know who she was, but she got into she was the youngest person to ever win a title. And, of course, when people think of wrestling, they think of as Vince Vaughn says in a movie, it's a soap opera in spandex is basically what he tells the people training to be in there. And he is in this movie. He plays the trainer, Far Page, and he's hilarious. This movie puts Vince Vaughn, because we all know he's been good in movies and he's been bad, he is so funny in this movie as the guy that kind of has to decide for the Federation which, you know, up-and-comers are good wrestlers, which ones are bad. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is in it, of course. He's the one that produced it. He plays himself. I grew up a wrestling fanatic. I grew up with Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. I painted my face. I went berserk. My brother and I watched wrestling at the old Keough Opera House. So I was taken back to my old childhood watching this movie. But I was always fascinated by, even though it's fake, what they go through in the training and being wrestlers. I mean, it is real. They tear up their bodies, you know, because when they train and practice, they really hit each other. They really drop each other off these mats and all these turnbuckles. It's very brutal. So to see a woman go through this and actually, you know, triumph, it was a good story. And the real Paige, I think she wrestled for 4 years. But if you like a good laugh and a good story, Fighting With My Family is hilarious. And it's directed by Stephen Merchant, who worked with Ricky Gervais on Extras and the British version of The Office. So he was a good pick. I don't think he'd be anybody's first pick, but The Rock, when The Rock calls your number, you pretty much got to go to work. So
my wife and I were going to go see this movie this weekend, and I was kind of on the fence because I watched the trailer, and apparently the trailer doesn't do it justice because you say it's really funny.
No, it is because, you know, her dad, played by Nick Frost, is kind of this gritty former criminal who doesn't really have any filter, and he's sitting with this wrestler, and he's on the phone going, okay, you want me to do what? He slams this wrestler in the crotch with a bowling ball. He's like, will you do this in the ring? And he goes, sure. And then he hits him on the head with a trash can lid. He goes, you're going to do this too? It's just hilarious because most of these lower circuit wrestling matches, it's real. They're really dropping each other onto staples and nails. It's pretty gritty. There's a Mickey Rourke film called The Wrestler that really emphasized, well, in Britain, when they're wrestling in these little opera houses and town halls, it's real. I mean, they're throwing each other out of the ring. And of course, when you get the WWE, it's more watered down, it's fake. But just seeing what goes into the training, I mean, that's what this movie goes into, but there's also a lot of laughs. It's not heavy-handed, it doesn't slow down, and there's plenty. I mean, The Rock has to give one of his famous, you know, pep talks to Paige, and it's hilarious. He calls her a little white, pale schoolgirl. What you gonna do when The Rock comes after you? It's just hilarious. And he gets to draw.
What are some of the famous catchphrases or famous phrases? I know, can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Yeah, can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Hulkamania.
But a couple of these other guys.
Macho Man Randy Savage, who used to be a catcher in the minor leagues before he was Macho Man.
He was with the Cardinals organization.
Yeah, and then he had a heart attack at the wheel.
Yeah.
And who was, and I don't follow wrestling, but the Ted DiBiase, he was a Million Dollar Man.
Million
Dollar
Man.
Wow.
Yes. Or Superfly, Jimmy DeSantis.
And then there was Flair, Wonderboy Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Ric Steamboat. There was Vader. Is he still alive?
Yeah. Oh, no. Mr. Perfect, it passed away. British Bulldog is gone.
There was a guy who used to say, it's Vader time, and he had like this weird face mask on.
Did he say it with that accent? Did he say it's Vader time?
He said it exactly like
that. So many wrestlers that passed away.
Yeah, he's from Birmingham.
Yeah. A hilarious thing to see on YouTube is Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. And I'm not a big wrestling guy, but Mean Gene Okerlund, who was the voice of the WWF, just passed away about a month ago. They were showing some of his all-time highlights. One of the funniest live TV things I've ever seen in my life is Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, going on live TV with Gene Okerlund, and he said, Gene, I can't really do I can do a Gene Okerlund imitation, but I can't do Paul Orndorff, so I'll just do a Paul Orndorff normal voice. He just said, Gene, I'm not going to be able to do these interviews with you anymore, man. Gene's like, well, why is that, Paul? He's like, because I'm getting too many complaints from lawyers across the country that every time I appear on live TV with you, women are leaving their husbands and getting on airplanes to fly to the cities.
I can totally see him saying that.
And he
too.
Said it with a total straight deadpan
yeah.
face. Oh, that
These
was funny
These guys,
stuff.
I mean, one of the most heartbreaking moments as a kid growing up was when my dad told me it was fake. I was like, well, I was like, no. Because he told me, yes, the ultimate warrior and Hulk Hogan, they had, like, dinner before their match. I was like, no, they didn't. They hate each other, Dad. They hate each other. So this
now,
movie...
Before we get some stories, because I got one for you, too. Let's just do ARDs for this fighting with my family.
I'm going to give it 3 out of 4. I'm nudging towards 3.5, but I think that might have to come later. 3 out of 4, solid movie.
If you'd said 3.5, then I absolutely would have been there before the end of the week, but I may go anyway. Here we go. 3 ARDs, fighting with my family.
All right, Dan.
Now, Dan, were you, I don't know, at the Kicks, when we worked at Kicks, were you in the studio when that, and I forgot which wrestler it was, big deal, big time wrestler came in and shared some of the secrets with us?
No, I wasn't there.
I wish I could remember if it was Andre the Giant or somebody comes in and he had his forehead had like little tiny etchings in it, like a chicken had danced on his head 100 times. And he said, if you want to bleed in the ring and make it look like you're really hurt, you just reach up. And he showed me they have like a ring that had little tiny shards of razor blades in it, just the point. And you reach up and hit your forehead and cut your forehead. And he said, it'll just drip blood like crazy. Man. And he said, I've done it hundreds of times. And he said, here, take a closer look. And I looked over, and his forehead was just etched up. And he said, that's the easiest way to start bleeding, is just hit your forehead with these sharp little things they had in their hands. Or maybe it was in a part of a ring or inside the palm.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, they've really thought this through. And it's very choreographed, is probably the best way to
put it. Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, it is pretty much like, you know, physical theater. Like, imagine a play where they just, like, hit each other. But if you recall in the wrestler, Limey, you know, Mickey Rourke does that in one scene. He tapes this blade, I think, to either his inside of his hair. And when he's in the ring, he kind of covers up his head and he cuts his forehead. To heighten the effect of the drama, but
that was a great movie.
In that scene where the guy throws him off and he falls on barbed wire,
mm-hmm.
and they're pulling those little mm-hmm. nails out of his back. Oh man,
yeah, that was supposed to be Mickey Rourke's big comeback movie.
It was, it yeah.
He did, yeah, but it wasn't because he didn't do anything else. It
well,
wasn't
I mean, he kind
of
got a bunch
of
work
new
afterwards. Yeah, I mean, he got nominated for an Oscar and he got a bunch of small jobs after that. But I mean, for him, that's the kind of movie you can just kind of hang your hat on. I mean, that movie was perfectly suited for him. And the whole movie, I mean, he was that guy. I mean, yeah. I felt so sorry for him. Marissa Tomei, who was gorgeous in that movie, played his girlfriend. But, you know, he's trying to reconnect with his daughter in the movie. And you know it's not going to end well for him, but...
Do you remember watching WrestleMania when you were younger? The one where Owen Hart died?
Yes!
Remember that one?
That's terrible.
Oh,
and there's video of that, isn't there? There's still video of him dropping.
I've never watched it. Who
was the big-name wrestler who killed himself?
Not Eddie Guerrero. Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
He went on a roid rage and killed his wife and son.
But there's so many that die like from heart disease, like Macho Man Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior, Jim Hellwig, who played Ultimate Warrior, mm-hmm. the Texas Tornado. I know his name was Eric in real life. He had a heart attack. The British Bulldog, this big old guy.
Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Perfect. I mean, Kurt Hennig. But yeah, that life, I mean, you can see it when they train in this movie. It's brutal. But... the next movie, the indie that came out, that I watched in Los Angeles, not without knowledge it would come out in St. Louis, came out Friday. My fellow film critic told me yesterday, like, hey, your movie came out. It is Arctic. It is with Mads Mikkelsen. It is a survival in the brutal cold kind of movie. And, again, this movie is special for one thing. It's got two actors in it. Mads is the only character that speaks in the movie. He plays a pilot who is... flying a small plane over the Arctic, it crashes, and the movie picks up, doesn't give you 1 ounce of story, and it works because you don't need it. It starts out, and he is trying to, you know, dig up a hole for his home, and for, you know, trying to start a fire. He's fishing, He's already surviving, I think, you know, for weeks upon time. But this movie kind of picks up where he has a choice. He can either stay in this little makeshift home that he's made for himself, a camp, or he can kind of go out and try to find rescue. And the movie really hinges on Mads Mikkelsen, who anybody who's seen Casino Royale will know. He was the bad guy that went up against Daniel Craig. He had the bloody eye. He's been in some a lot of movies, but lately with the Netflix film Polar, where he played a hitman, and now this film, he's kind of getting the leading role, the starring roles. This movie is nail-biting suspense. You don't know.
Tell me there's no talking in it, really?
Well, no, he talks. He basically has the only talking part, and he's talking to this fellow female crash survivor, but she doesn't talk because she's kind of really hurt. He's trying to save her and him. He's trying to keep them safe. Polar bears are coming around. The cold, you know, he gets injured. It's just an up and down thing, but he keeps you invested. I mean, I think you need a really great actor. And if you see this guy, if you look him up, I mean, he just has a very unique look. And he's a guy that's been working for years in Hollywood, and he's finally getting, like, the starring roles. I mean, you believe everything this character does. I mean, when he's fending off a polar bear, which is really realistic. I'm not even sure if they used a real bear in the movie or not. Part of the scenes are just horrifying because you don't know if he's going to make it or not. And one injury out in the cold can mean everything. And you don't know if the rescue's coming. And part of you is yelling at the guy, just stay in your camp. You've made this nice makeshift camp. You know, he hunts for fish. They're all, you know, he'll have food to eat. His home is in the plane, which he has kind of made into some kind of shelter. But there's also just so much suspense when he goes out there trying to find, you know, shooting a flare and hoping the plane flying over sees him or possibly.
What does she do this whole time? Just lie there?
Yeah, because she's kind of really almost not mortally injured, but she's pretty banged up. And
does he try to do it with her?
She's comatose. That'd be a very different scene, but no, it doesn't cross his mind. Hey, let's have a little sexy time here while we try to rescue ourselves.
Oh, you don't know that it didn't cross his mind.
Hey, I'm sure.
Didn't do it.
Well, you're right. He has a lot of time to think about that kind of stuff out there, yeah. Because the movie picks up where he's been there for a while. And I like that you never get to know how he got there. You just know that he was piloting a plane and it crashed. And you have this man against, you know, the elements. Because I think one of the most brutal, antagonists in a movie, it can just be the cold, you know, the dark or the cold.
Does it make you feel as cold
it
as
does.
That thing with Liam Neeson? That
it
was
does,
that,
the gray.
No, the other one.
Cold Pursuit.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, I got cold watching that thing.
Yeah.
I bet this does that, too. You actually start feeling like you're freezing.
Yeah, because in this movie, he's trying to draw in the snow with this big shovel, trying to, you know, this rescue sign, and he's digging with his hands. He's going without gloves. I mean, you got to imagine, when he gets into the plane, he takes off his shoes, his feet are all banged up. It makes you cold. I mean, the theater was fine, but this movie puts you in there with him. I've kind of felt myself kind of wanting to wear an extra coat watching this movie because you really feel for his character.
Right, so it's called Arctic?
It's called Arctic, right? And it came out limited earlier again in New York and L.A. It has expanded to the Plaza Frontenac, which is a good theater for it. Very intimate, small theater. You should go check this movie out. I would almost put it up there with Fighting with My Family, because this is just, it's not a true story, but man, it's easy to put yourself there when it's one person against the weather. I mean, against, you know, the elements, and I think it's great.
Arctic, A-R-D.
That's 3.5. 3.5, because Mads puts it 3.5. But I do want to make kind of an amendment. I would push Fighting with My Family to 3.5, as I read my review.
Well, hold on here. Now you've made this very difficult. Now Limey has to give us a half ARD for Fighting with My Family. He has to add it to the other three.
I wanted to add it just to make sure.
We need
it's on
a
record.
Half ARD added, and we'll start with a half ARD. Let's do that first. Here now is an extra half ARD for Fighting with My Family.
All right. Nice.
Now we need 3.5 for Arctic.
All right, Dan.
There you go.
Hey,
take a quick call with
GW.
I was just saying.
I didn't know if you guys were going to say, okay, we need to wrap it up, but go ahead.
Oh, man. How long have we worked together? 40, 50 years?
Yeah.
Let's bring GW in here real quickly. We don't have a lot of time. GW, say hi to Dan Buffa.
Hey, Dano. Hey, you guys. AM and the PM.
How you doing?
Hi, me, Dan, Frank, guys, Tim.
What's up, GW?
Yes, sir. So, in September, I was out in Carolina, and a movie came out that involved the tracking and going after a former Nazi who they ended up finding in South America or Argentina or somewhere like that. And I've yet to find that movie, and I can't think or know the name of it.
Is it Operation Finale?
I'm sorry?
Operation Finale. It came out last fall. They're tracking down.
Operation Finale is the name of the movie.
Yeah. I haven't watched it. It was supposed to be this big Oscar-worthy film, and then it kind of came and went in theaters without much attention.
Say that name again.
Operation Finale. It's got Oscar Isaac, Ben Kingsley, and it's directed by Chris Wirtz, which is a very inspired.
Wow, listen to you.
Yeah, I mean, it came out, and I wanted to see it, but it's one of those films that it wasn't screened, and if I don't see it in the first week or two, I'm on to the next movie. So it is about a team of secret agents that are setting out to track down the Nazi officer who masterminded the Holocaust.
Yeah, it was supposed to be really good, but I never got around to seeing it. Could not remember the name of it. I thank you very much. You guys have a blast this afternoon. I'll see you.
All right. Thank you, GW, and thank you for listening. We are pretty much out of time here. Give me your email address, Dan Buffa.
Buffa, B-U-F-F-A, 82, at gmail.com. That is my email address. And if GW is still listening, it is on Amazon Video for $4.99, Operation Finale, if you want to watch it.
And do you have any idea, real quickly, if it's any good or not? I mean, you don't have any reviews you've looked at?
Looking at the score on IMDb.com, it got a 58 out of 100, so it's not terrible. But I think that people had high hopes for this movie, but the critical reception in St. Louis here was kind of underwhelming. It wasn't good. Good subject matter and a couple good scenes, but not overall worth like running out to see it. But it's definitely probably worth a rental.
A movie has to have a Rotten Tomatoes of 70% for me to see it. From moviegoers, not critics. I don't go by the critics.
Well, hey, well, Frank, I will say, Finding with My Family and Arctic both have a 70-plus rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I will go see those. Dan Buffa brought to you by Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States. For a lot of good reasons, you can find out more at windowworldstlouis.com. We'll do it again next week. What do you say?
Yes, I'm Dan Buffa. I've had enough of
Thank you, Dan. And now I have just enough time before we get into 5 o'clock and the news and the playhouse and the joke and all that stuff to not shame you, but just ask the question, why in the world have you not been to the dentist for a while? Those of you who haven't been for a long, long time, don't give me that money thing. Well, it's too expensive. Really? Really? You can't think of other things you've spent money on where you put that as a priority over your teeth and gums and health? Not everybody has dental insurance. I don't think I have dental insurance anymore. You have to make some decisions in life. You know, what's important? What's more important? What's less important? Your teeth are very important. Your gums are important. Ask any MD, doctor, or dentist what can happen when your gums get infected. Go to the dentist. Don't go to just any dentist. If you're scared to death, I have a dentist for you. Ballast Dental Care. I've gone for 46 years. And those of you listening who have been to the dentist recently, 6 months ago, a year ago, a couple of years ago, same dentist. You should go there too. And if your response is, well, I have a dentist. You have a dentist. You look forward to your dental appointment? Probably not. If you don't, make one appointment at Ballast Dental Care. Then you send me an email, and you tell me the difference. You tell me why you now actually look forward to your next dental appointment. You think I'm kidding? Make the appointment. I'll give you the website after I tell you where they are. They're at the corner of Ballast and Clayton Roads. It's Ballast Dental Care, ballastdentalcare.com. News is on the way, followed by the Playhouse, and that followed, of course, by Mike Evans, because it's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, and 590thefan.com, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The House is expected to vote soon on a resolution that would overturn President Trump's declaration of a national emergency along the southern border. Democrats have been arguing in the debate before a vote that this is a constitutional question of executive overreach. Republicans have been arguing the emergency is real and action is needed. Missouri Republican Sam Graves.
I support the president's efforts. I believe he is well within the law in making this declaration, and I'd urge my colleagues to oppose Joint Resolution 46.
Former Donald Trump personal